If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Now that we've completed the sentence, we're happy and pleased to put this matter behind us. This August will be 3 years since this occurred, and quite frankly, the county and law enforcement and even the public defender's office, it's enormously taxing to adjudicate a case like this, to go through the litigation process. And we're grateful that it's over. We're mindful of what happened here. I'm pleased with the sentence that was imposed by the judge, quite obviously. We did examine very closely the law as it relates to consecutive versus concurrent sentences to determine whether we could advocate in good faith for a consecutive sentence, and the determination was made that would be inappropriate here, and so we didn't go there. There was some discussion on the record concerning the lack of motive evidence when the people had to prove intent, and I would like to speak to that for a moment. I had spoken a number of times about motive evidence, that it's not necessary for the people to submit motive evidence in order to prove intent, but that there are times when we do so, and there are times that we determine not to do so. And here we had made the determination quite deliberately not to do so. I'd like to just explain this to you because I think that some justification should be, should be put out there. When this all occurred, back in August of 22, I prepared search warrant applications, and we did go into Mr. Matar's electronic devices that he brought into Chautauqua County and were seized at the time that the event occurred at the institution. And we were able to look into those based upon the legal authority that we got from the search warrant applications, and we were able to start to develop some motive evidence. We then took that and we made contact with New Jersey counterparts, and we developed some additional probable cause to go into Mr. Matar's residence in the state of New Jersey to review other electronic devices and writings and any evidence we may have related to the commission of the crime that occurred here, and we developed further motive evidence. And now all of that was supplied to federal authorities, and at that time the federal government was looking closely at what had occurred here, and they were evaluating the facts and applying it to federal laws, which are quite different than state laws. And because those federal laws are quite different, the expanse of what they could look at if they were to obtain their own search warrant was quite broader than what we could look at. And that's one thing I think is important, because they're in a much better position to evaluate what we can call motive evidence than we are, because in our here on a state level, we're talking about attempted murder and assault. These are just localized events, whereas federal statutes, the implication of federal law, and at that time it was being investigated, and I believe my understanding is that that investigation has resulted in an indictment the federal statutes are in a better position to deal with the mode of evidence, which obviously has international implications. So we stayed away from that. And we also stayed away from it because we were requested informally to just not go there so that we wouldn't disrupt the federal process, which went from investigation to prosecution. And then finally, I think it's very important for everyone to recognize that my job is to just, you know, to assert the state's case as best as we can, or the people's case as best as we can. And I have to be mindful of potential prejudice, you know, and we have to safeguard Mr. Matar's rights. And the mode of evidence here could potentially give rise to prejudicial, you know, prejudice of potential jurors and so forth. So looking at everything, we made a decision conscientiously not to present motive evidence, and we felt, and I think the end result justifies our opinion that we could prove intent without getting into motive evidence. So we have done so. I don't like the fact that it was thrown back in my face, especially in light of the fact that the defense at one time had filed a motion trying to preclude me from going in that direction. But at the same time, and I think it's important to recognize that the defense itself also had a very difficult time at dealing with this fact pattern and the surrounding circumstances and the dynamics in their defense, their vigorous defense, you know, which I thought was a very good defense. And I think Mr. Barone does a very effective job in what he does. And I wouldn't take anything from him because I think that that's a very difficult job. I think each one of us had very difficult jobs, different roles and responsibilities in this process. So I just wanted to address that. I think the only thing I would, you know, say to you is that, you know, I think I've said this before, you know, 3 years is a long time. It's been a lot. You know, there's been many delays from my perspective. I'm just glad that justice delayed is not justice denied. Mr. Matar had came into, you know, New York State as a visitor. He's now a resident, and, you know, he has 25 years plus whatever credits he has already received for the time, you know, that he has been incarcerated since this event. We're closing in on 3 years shortly. He will receive credits for good time, for, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities that are available in the state correction system that might mitigate the sentence, you know, administratively outside of the courtroom. And I hope that he utilizes that time because, I recognize at my age that when he gets out, he'll be younger than I am now. And he'll be, you know, he'll have a fairly full life ahead of him. And hopefully he'll reconsider, you know, his value system in light of what's occurred here. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy that anyone should resort to this level of violence. It's a tragedy that all of this occurred. It's a horrific event that despite what Mr. Barone argued in the courtroom, which I think, you know, was very effective, and I think it was a good argument. You know, Mr. Matar controlled all of this, including the selection, not just of the venue and the subject matter that was occurring at that time, but of his intended target, and all of that swings both ways. So, unfortunately, again, while it's difficult for us, certainly it was difficult for Mr. Barone and his group, and I think they did a good job, and I want to acknowledge that. The only other thing I want to say to you is that, you know, I want to acknowledge Mr. Rushdie and Mr. Reese. They have both undergone a traumatic event in their lives. And I do want to acknowledge those people on the stage, both employees of the institution and just visitors who rushed to the stage at their own peril and, you know, considerable personal safety risks to stop this attack before the completion of the act, and to save Mr. Rushdie's life. But for their interaction, I think the evidence is clear that Mr. Rushdie would have bled out from about 15 holes that were inflicted upon his torso and his neck and his face, right there on the stage in front of everyone who was there to watch it. And I would say something else, and I said it in the courtroom. I had asked the judge rhetorically to consider, in his 50 some odd years of life, any horrific events he's witnessed, and I ask each and every one of you to consider that too. I can look back on seemingly innocent, I recall, you know, watching a car accident, watching the certain things that stay with me 50 years later. And I am certain in my mind that those individuals that were present when this occurred and witnessed it are impacted by this. And yes, I did refer to them as victims because they didn't ask for this, and they will live with this for the rest of their lives. And those that were closer to the stage will probably have a much harder time than those were that were seated in the back. Those that actually were on the stage or came out upon the stage, including some very, you know, brave individuals, they're going to have to deal with this for the rest of their lives. So this sentence does hopefully take into account them as well, and hopefully they can start the healing process along with Mr. Rushdie and Mr. Rees. And with that,
a procedural question, if you might, on a determining sentence, it's been a little while for me, not that I've had one, but at a determining sentence in New York State, can you still get out after 6/7? Is that still the case?
Essentially, yes. There are all types of credits available in the system. We should note that the system limits the availability of credits that might that might be taken advantage of by an incarcerated individual when that person has been convicted of a violent felony act rather than a nonviolent act such as drugs or something else.
But the 6/7 is still in existence.
Essentially, yes.
Okay. What do you think about Mr. Matar's speech at the end? And I didn't hear him say, "I'm sorry," or "I regret what he did." What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think he was trying to thread a needle that was, because in his speech, he, in effect, was providing the motive evidence that that his counsel was saying was lacking here. And I understand why Mr. Barone asserted that. And that, and I think that that was, good for him for saying that. He was doing his job very well. What more can I say? There's an irony to all of this, right? I mean, his value system is that he can impose his own sense of justice and sentencing upon somebody who violates, his value system, and that was problematic.
The case, as you said, has been going on for a long time. Does the sentencing sort of bring a sense of closure, not only to the victims of the case, but to you guys as well, and why?
Sure. There are post-conviction remedies that are available to this defense counsel, and they've indicated that they intend to aggressively pursue those. And so, although we move into a different stage, it's quite a different situation for us. As I've lamented about so many times, we have some very difficult hurdles to overcome because we simply don't have the assets or the resources to do our jobs easily in compliance with New York State's discovery laws, which were dramatically changed a few years back. And unfortunately, they have overshadowed this case. So now that we've gotten to this point, the two areas that I was most concerned about getting in through the trial is potential prejudice opportunities that might derail us again. And then certainly discovery compliance, which is always just a very difficult thing for a small prosecutorial office.
Did you wish to get, or did you ever talk about Mr. Rushdie's letter being read into the record as a victim impact statement?
Well, when you say read into the record, it is part of the record. The record will include whatever stated in the courtroom and also any written submissions that are filed in connection with the action. So Mr. Rushdie's statement is included in the pre-sentence investigation report. But why didn't I? I'm sorry?
But that's not part of the public record, right?
Well, it's not part of the public record because by statute, the pre-sentence investigation report is a sealed document.
Right.
However, it is part of the record of this proceeding, which will travel with Mr. Matar as he goes into the system. Now, I could have read into the record, and I thought about it, and I actually didn't anticipate the lengthy conversation, which I thought was a good conversation, a healthy conversation between Mr. Barone and Judge Foley. I was trying to, to get past some of the more obvious and self-evident points is, obviously we have two individuals that are in their mid to late 70s who were stabbed. Mr. Rushdie was stabbed about 15 times and Mr. Rees was injured himself. So I could have gotten into Mr. Rushdie's letter as he described the trauma, that he had undergone. I would say that essentially most of what he conveyed was reflected in his courtroom testimony, but in the courtroom testimony, he was obviously precluded because it's irrelevant from getting into the, you know, this the post-traumatic stress that he has endured since then.
What would he have to say, if you don't mind?
What I would essentially say is he's going to he's traumatized, that he has nightmares about what he experienced. I would say that on behalf of Mr. Rushdie, whether it was in his letter or not, that obviously this is a major setback for an individual that was starting to emerge in his very later years of life into society after going into hiding after the fatwa had occurred. And here he was without a security detail and he was at his most vulnerable, and this is when he was attacked, and unfortunately, you know, this sets him back. What are we talking about? The fatwa issued in 1989, so about, 40 years? So it sets him back quite a bit, you know, and it's unfortunate. This is not a way to go into the later years of your life. Anything else? Otherwise, I appreciate it.
Involved at all in the federal case or no?
I'm sorry, what about
the? Involved in federal charges?
No.
Jason, can you just, for the record, just break down what the sentence for us today on both charges?
Yeah. So the attempted murder in the second degree conviction, which is in New York State, is considered a Class B violent felony. The maximum, I think, the minimum offhand, if you have no criminal record whatsoever, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 years, and with together with some parole time afterwards. The maximum is 25 years with 5 years of post-release supervision or parole, and that was what the judge had sentenced Mr. Matar to. On the assault second conviction, which is a Class D violent felony, the maximum is 7 years plus, I think, 3 years of 3 years of post-release supervision. And in that situation, Mr. Matar was sentenced to that as well. Then there was the issue of whether those sentences could be run concurrent or consecutive to one another, and the law is pretty clear that because all of this arose from essentially one transaction or one event, that it has to, by statute, run concurrently, and so those two sentences have merged into one concurrent sentence of 25 plus 5.
Is there a message to the community at all who is, in your Chautauqua County that's been watching over these past almost 3 years, that's kind of endured this trial as well?
It just that we have now closed it out as best as we could. It continues in the background, and hopefully we can all just resume normalcy here. We are, I would note, we're going into another season for the institution, and hopefully we can put this behind us and just move forward.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
we've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.